Today on Seculo, the Biden administration says to prepare for a world where Iran is a full nuclear power. That would include a full array of nuclear weapons.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo.
We have to prepare for a world, which we're doing now in consultation with our partners from the region, about a world where Iran doesn't have constraints on its nuclear program, and we have to consider options to dealing with that, which is what we're doing, even as we hope that we can get back to the deal. That is by far our preference. But as I said, Iran is giving us its answer by what it's doing and not doing every day, and we need to take that into account.
We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110.
I think that was an inconsistent message from Rob Malley. It contradicted what Secretary Blinken is saying. Blinken is trying to say, listen, all options are on the table. I think that's hollow, by the way. I don't think people believe President Biden will take military action, but he's trying to put it on the table to get Iran to come back to negotiations. But Malley seems to be saying we might need to accept another world, and that's dangerous.
And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Why do we have to accept Iran in a world where Iran has zero constraints on their nuclear program? That would mean an Iran with zero constraints on a nuclear weapons program. Let me tell you what that becomes. That becomes a nuclear Saudi Arabia, a nuclear UAE, a nuclear Qatar, maybe a nuclear Jordan, possibly Egypt. Why? Because those allies of ours that we work, and we have this group, and of course along with Israel, that we work with to, in that region of the world, isolate Iran, is not just going to sit there as ducks to be picked off by a dangerous Ayatollah and his Iranian Revolutionary Guard fully nuclearized. But yet, that is who you just heard is Robert Malley. He under the Obama years, negotiated that JCPOA, the two pages of bullet points. He is now doing interviews that are in direct conflict with our Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, right now, saying that, well, we just have to, if we can't get back into the deal with Iran, they're just going to be a full nuclear power. Now, Dad, there's a lot to unpack there. Well as to unpack with where Tony Blinken is meeting with the foreign minister of Israel, and he's saying all options are on the table when it comes to going from sanctions to covert or direct military action when it comes to containing Iran's nuclear program. And let me remind our listeners, Dad, that Israel has made the statement that they will never allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon. So that ups, again, it kind of increases the pressure on this situation.
Well, it does increase the pressure, but I think we have to take it even a step further here, Jordan, and that's this. You've got to look at the situation now from the eyes of the entire Middle East region. It's not just Israel. It's the Middle East region that's at play here. And I wonder, and this is just kind of, you know, walking through this, are we at a situation now where, as Iran ups the ante and the United States lowers the pressure, which is precisely what's happening here, are we at a situation where what we're going to see develop, and you know, is a nuclear region, and that bodes for a lot of problems. Now, there was diplomacy going on during the years of the Trump administration. It was unauthorized. It was by John Kerry. I don't know what Malley's interest was. We have a lawsuit on that. Right. Go ahead.
Malley was a part of it. Kerry was a part of it. You also had the former Energy Secretary as a part of it. We filed, again, so they were doing this under the Trump years. Remember, there were violations there. Like, is that the violation of that Logan Act that we've talked about so much? But tried to undermine the Trump administration's efforts directly in their negotiations with Iran. They put an end to that. So Robert Malley was there. Kerry was there. And, of course, now we've got Jake Sullivan, Malley, and Kerry all back together pushing this deal. But let me just tease this out to you. Do you think it could just be a scare tactic so that they ultimately have a reason to give Iran that $10 billion to start the negotiations again? Think about it a little differently as we come back from this break. And if you want to talk to us on air, 1-800-684-3110 on this inevitable nuclear Iran that the Biden administration is announcing. 1-800-684-3110.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial at a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack. It's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
You compare and contrast these two statements, and then Rick Riddell is going to be joining us the next segment because I really want his insight on this. Because here's the Secretary of State Tony Blinken at a press conference with Israel and the UAE just yesterday. Take a listen.
We will look at every option to deal with the challenge posed by Iran. We continue to believe that diplomacy is the most effective way to do that, but it takes two to engage in diplomacy, and we have not seen. From Iran, a willingness to do that.
Let's remember that Iran last week did offer up the potential to re-enter the negotiations if $10 billion was unsealed. So they had assets frozen in the United States they can't get access to. Some of that is $10 billion. They said if you unfreeze those assets and provide those back to Iran, we will go back to the negotiating table with the U.S. So that is on the table. We're not getting any direct comment yet from Blinken on that offer. But then you have Robert Malley. He's the lead negotiator yet again when it comes to Iran and the nuclear deal, if you will. He was the lead negotiator for President Obama. This is a very different statement he made the same day as Tony Blinken yesterday, Bite 6.
We have to prepare for a world, which we're doing now in consultation with our partners from the region, about a world where Iran doesn't have constraints on its nuclear program, and we have to consider options to dealing with that, which is what we're doing, even as we hope that we can get back to the deal. That is by far our preference. But as I said, Iran is giving us its answer by what it's doing and not doing every day, and we need to take that into account.
I mean, Dad, to prepare for a world where Iran has unconstrained nuclear power, which means also unconstrained nuclear weapons. But Robert Malley kind of says that straightforward, like that's just a matter of fact. That would mean arming most of the Middle East.
That's exactly right. And as I said earlier, that's going to require a raise of the level of tension in the region. So the Middle East becomes, it's already a tense situation, and it becomes a real powder keg. Now, what's interesting here is we got on this early when we found out that there was basically other negotiations going on when the president was President Trump. And Andy, as you know, and you've been supervising this, we filed a FOIA request, which ended up in a federal lawsuit. In fact, there was a status conference on that lawsuit this week because we want to know what has been agreed to by other parties here. Because I'm not quite sure, to tell you the truth, that this wasn't being negotiated out the whole time.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Jay. We filed a lawsuit in federal district court in Washington, D.C., to find out exactly what Kerry, O'Malley, and the Energy Secretary were talking about in these back channels of communication during the time that President Trump was president. And, of course, that would have been an illegal thing to do. You have no right to negotiate when you're outside of the government on behalf of the government. But who knows what kind of deal that they were working out, and appears to have been resurrected now with O'Malley back in power as the special envoy to Iran and Kerry as the climate czar and so forth. They are now resurrecting the deal, which is essentially to sort of throw the towel in, it seems to me, and say, notwithstanding what Blinken is saying, O'Malley said, we got to prepare for a region that Iran has nuclear weapons. Well, that creates a powder keg out of the Middle East that's already a powder keg. That creates a situation in which Israel Israel has said that it will not tolerate that. So if the Israelis are not going to tolerate it, why should we?
And I want to look at it too this way, because I really do believe that when we need to take this, yes, you can take it at face value, but then look at the conflicting comments. Is this the way the Biden team is attempting to sell this to you, the American people, who don't like this Iranian nuclear deal, who don't trust the two pages of bullet points that was initially negotiated out, who know that the inspectors were never able to do their job? Why? How do you sell to the American people that it'd be worth, you know, unfreezing $10 billion in assets to go to the Ayatollah and the Islamic Republic of Iran? You scare them. And you scare them by having Robert Malley go out and say, you know what, if we don't get to this negotiation, which will cost $10 billion, but really that's just frozen assets, so it's net zero technically to the American people, if you can believe their math, we're going to have to spend the $10 billion to get to the table, because we can't allow a unrestrained nuclear Iran. So, Dad, I always look at it that way in Washington, is that they are setting this up, that it's not an accident that they have conflicting statements when they're talking to different audiences.
No, precisely. Of course not. And I want to reiterate that. These are coordinated statements. These are not accidents. These are not misstatements. These are coordinated statements from the various players that are, in this particular case, very direct. Now, the question is going to be, and I'm going to go to Than Bennett on this, our Director of Government Affairs, and that is, what is the reaction of Congress to all this? Because there's doublespeak, but I think, as Jordan said, it's doublespeak with a purpose.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I mean, part of the reason that I think that Jordan's correct on this is because Iran, with zero constraints on their nuclear capacity, has always been the goal for this regime, Jay. I mean, think back to the Obama-Biden administration. That was the entire reason that the JCPOA was put forward in the first place. I mean, I won't go through all of it, but you had a 10-year sunset on all the restrictions in it. You allowed Iran to inspect their own facilities. You had side deals that gave them notice of inspections. Jay, so the deal itself, even if you thought Iran was always going to comply with it, actually guaranteed that they became a nuclear power. That was the goal under the Obama administration. I have no reason to believe that it's any different now. So the scenario that Jordan puts forward, where this is now justification that we've got to get back into the deal to constrain Iran, it makes perfect sense, because even if they get back into the deal, Jay, what does it do? It allows Iran to be a nuclear power, and even if they comply, maybe it pushes it down the road just a couple of years now, although I think all of us know that we won't comply. So you've got to look two or three layers deep. And Jay, again, this is why that FOIA that we have out there is so important. I would just maybe pose this question to our audience. Can you imagine if Secretary Pompeo was now doing what Secretary Kerry was doing during the Trump administration? Just imagine the reaction.
Yeah, now, it's interesting, because I'm reading this. So from our FOIA, this is what we put. President Trump in 2019 sought to open a back channel of communication with top Iranian officials and saw the UN General Assembly meeting in September as a potential opportunity to defuse escalating tensions with Tehran, but the effort failed. Now, remember, this is exactly why, precisely why the president put on those very tough sanctions on Iran, which were crippling the economy. 2 months earlier, however, a different back channel was thriving in New York. Iran's smooth English, this is from a newspaper report, smooth English-speaking foreign minister, Mohammad Zarif, met with Robert Malley, who was President Obama's Middle East advisor, in an apparent bid to undermine the Trump team and lay the groundwork for a post-Trump relations. And now we have filed a federal lawsuit on that, Andy, because there's all kinds of legal questions, even maybe some criminality involved. In that, we got to see what the evidence is. I'm not a huge fan of the Logan Act. I think there's some real constitutional issues with it. But I will say this. This is not, no accidents here, but our lawsuit could not be more timely.
That's absolutely correct, Jay. This is a timely lawsuit because it is a lawsuit coming at a time where there's crucial negotiations that are going on that we don't know about, and that is President Trump. We do know that President Trump tried to open a back channel of communication, but that he was being undermined, basically, by Kerry and Malley at a time when they had no authority and no right. They were not in the government. They were not part of the government. And we want to find out just exactly what they were doing, who they were talking to, who they were discussing with, what proposals they were putting out, what feelers they were saying that were going to be put out there that would be amenable to a post-Trump era because they thought they were going to win. They ultimately did. And now we want to find out exactly what they were talking about. And that is why this lawsuit that we have brought in federal district court is so critical, because we hope through that lawsuit to ferret out exactly what these back channel communications with Malley and with Kerry were.
You know, it's interesting. Celia on Facebook wrote in, the administration sold us out to Russia, China, the Taliban. Now it seems like Iran. America last is the Biden foreign policy. Because take a listen. Here's Malley again. They're ready to not only this sounds more extreme than just the $10 billion in frozen assets back to Iran. Take a listen to what they're willing to do to get back to the negotiating table. 17.
We are prepared to remove all of the sanctions that were imposed by the Trump administration that were inconsistent with the deal, and therefore we could get back to the business that we should have been on.
So, Dad, remove all the sanctions that are inconsistent with the deal, influx the cash to the Iranians, which is what we know they want. This idea that, there's going to be an unconstrained nuclear Iran is the scare tactic. And then when you actually listen, they've got their plan.
Exactly. And as I said, all of this is heavily coordinated. So let's not for a moment think that any of this is an accident. Jordan, it'd be interesting to see what Rick Grenell, our senior advisor on global affairs, has to say. But hey, this is not, no accidents here. This is all exactly what they wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. So Rick Grenell is going to be joining us the next segment of the broadcast. We're going to break this down with him. The conflicting statements between you've got our Secretary of State and you've got the lead negotiator on Iran back again. Their conflicting statements, are they really in conflict or is this the Biden plan? I mean, again, just to get Rick's analysis of this, because he's been at both State Department, he's been in the intelligence world, it's going to be very helpful when we come back from the break. As always, I encourage you to stay updated about like our lawsuit, the FOIA in this matter, on ACLJ.org. Be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org. where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Back to Secul. We're waiting to be joined by Rick Grinnell in just a minute. I just want you to understand here that we have an administration on the Iran situation that is putting two different messages out. We know last week Iran made their first public offer to the Biden administration about what it would take to get them to the negotiating table. That was the $10 billion of unfrozen assets. And then we have our Secretary of State saying that all options are on the table in containing Iran. But we also have the lead negotiator on the Iranian nuclear deal. Let me just play the short version, Byte 17.
We are prepared to remove all of the sanctions that were imposed by the Trump administration that were inconsistent with the deal, and therefore we could get back to the business that we should have been on.
So, if we removed all the sanctions... And this is someone who believes that if we don't do that, that Iran will have an unrestricted, uncontained nuclear program that includes a unrestricted nuclear weapons program.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the problem. I think that's the exact problem here. And when you say unrestricted, what does that end up meaning? I mean, does that mean that Iran is going to be in a situation where... we know they're going to, listen, under the JCPOA, they build an Iranian nuclear arsenal at some point. They're given a green light. So this buying time does nothing for a region, Andy, that doesn't think in days, but thinks in decades and generations.
That's the thing, Jay, that people don't understand who are not historians and who don't read history. In the Middle East, you don't think of things in terms of days. You think in terms of eons, eternity, generational thinking, and thinking in the very long term. The Iranians have bided their time. They've gone through the horrors that they faced at the Trump administration, who clamped down on them, and they said, this too will pass. It always does. And then Biden comes in, and as Jordan said, is giving conflicting or seemingly conflicting signals. Blinken says one thing, Malley says another, and the Iranians sit back and they think extortion. You give me the $10 billion, I'll come to the table. But they don't think like that. We don't think like they do. We have to begin to think in historical perspective. They bide their time. The difference between a radical and a moderate is patience, and they've got their patience. And it looks like they're going to get what they want, Jay.
Let me bring in Rick Grinnell, our senior advisor for foreign policy, national security. Rick is joining us by phone today. Rick, just your assessment. We've got, on the one hand, Robert Malley saying that we're going towards a path of an unconstrained nuclear Iran. Unconstrained. No, you know, full-on nuclear arsenal and everything else that comes with it. On the other hand, we have Secretary Blinken meeting with his counterpart from Israel, the foreign minister, and he's saying, well, all options are on the table. That would even include military options, but covert options and other sanctions are on the table. And so we take these two statements. We also know last week that Iran made the offer, Rick, of if you unfreeze $10 billion in assets, you can get back to the table with us. I mean, so there's a lot of conflict here, but what I think is that this is... the way I'm reading this, Rick, is that this is a way that the Biden team is trying to ultimately sell this to the American people. Like, if we don't give them $10 billion, if we don't do what they want to get back to the negotiating table, we will have an uncontained nuclear Iran.
Well, this just harkens back to the Obama negotiations where everyone on the U.S. side that was involved messaged constantly to the American public and to the Iranian public and the public in the Middle East was that we want a deal. And the goal was a deal. And when you enter negotiations, you know, I've done thousands of diplomatic negotiations. And when you walk into the room and you actually announce that you want a deal, and that the goal is a deal, then the other side hears that you're willing to do anything as long as there's a deal. And they have us over the barrel because the Biden team is desperate to pretend like they've come to an agreement. This is, we've talked about the warnings of consensus, and that's where we are with the Iranian regime. The Biden team wants consensus with the Iranians, which means they're going to stake out a position, we're going to stake out a position, and we're just going to cut it in half. And that doesn't protect America, and it doesn't protect Israel. It's a dangerous, slippery slope.
You know, Rick, one of the things that, you know, of course, I'm concerned about is that we're already in a region that is highly volatile. And let's face it, I mean, it's a powder keg. And adding a nuclear Iran to an already very contentious and very dangerous neighborhood just ups the risk factor, not just for Israel, but for other of our allies, our Arab allies in the region, and ultimately the United States. So couple that with the fact that we know through the lawsuit we filed in federal court that the John Kerry and Malley were both negotiating with Zarif while you all were in office, I think just shows you how this was a pre-planned move.
Well, thank God for ACLJ and the courage that the team brings, because without filing these lawsuits to demand transparency, to demand that we understand and hold, let's be honest, ACLJ is holding the Biden administration accountable. And that is so crucial right now. Organizations like ACLJ have to be supported by our listeners, because without holding the Biden team accountable, we won't know what they're doing behind closed doors. And Jay, you're exactly right that we are sending terrible messages, and we have Arab allies. Make no mistake, the Trump administration created more Arab allies because you look at the Abraham Accords. And the Abraham Accords were important because it said Arab allies of the United States were desperate to move on and create peace in the region. So Saudi Arabia and the UAE and Morocco and a whole bunch of countries, who Sudan even, were desperate to move on away from what Iran is trying to create in the region, which is instability.
You know, Rick, one final thing here, and I want to talk about the Balkans. If you could stay with us through the first 5 minutes of the second half hour, but a final thought here, too, on this issue with Iran. Should the American people under this administration, the Biden administration, I mean, I don't feel like the Robert Malley line is really where the Biden team is. I don't feel like they're just going to throw up their hands and say, oh, unrestrained nuclear Iran. I feel like they're going to do everything they can to get back to the negotiating table. And Iran has finally offered what they want in return for that, which unfortunately to me doesn't seem that far outside of what the Biden administration would do in releasing $10 billion in frozen assets.
Yeah, releasing money that, you know, the Obama-Biden team already did it before. They'll do it again if it gets them to the table. Money is no problem. We're seeing them spend like drunken sailors. So you're right. I think the money is going to be no big deal to the Biden administration. They'll pay it and get at the table.
All right, we come back. We're going to ask Rick, too, about the Balkans, the situation there. Violence occurring after a historic peace and new engagement there between the Serbs, the Albanians, that Rick was leading the charge on for the White House, a special envoy. We'll talk about that when we come back. As always, go to ACLJ.org.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now, more than ever, this is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Let me just say, we are going to stay on top of this Iran story as it unfolds. And you know we do that at the ACLJ. And one of the ways we're doing that, of course, is through our here's the initial FOIA I'm holding that was filed. This was filed in this was back in February, about the shadow diplomacy by these guys like Robert Malley, Jake Sullivan, the former energy secretary under Obama, former Secretary of State under Obama, who's now back in as well, John Kerry. This is our complaint where we had to file. You're seeing that. We can put that up on the screen. The complaint that was filed when they didn't respond, and we are on on Monday. Filed a joint status report there, so this should start picking up speed now that this is in court. But I want to return back to Rick Riddell for a minute. We're going to get into, folks, some of this border issues now that it's been uncovered that the Biden team has let in about 160,000 people in 7 months, to the United States that crossed the border illegally. 160,000. And we're going to get into that in the second half hour of the broadcast. But I first want to go to Rick one more time because, Rick, we didn't get to it in the last segment, but I wanted to let people update to you. Now you've been the special envoy to Serbia and Kosovo and the Balkans. And unfortunately, like we've seen with the Abraham Accords that we were talking about, the Biden team not continuing to cultivate that historic new working relationship.
Yeah, look, the Biden team has been MIA in the Balkans, and now what we're seeing is a lack of leadership. We've had over the last couple of days some incidents at the border, violence at the border between Serbia and Kosovo. There are local elections in Kosovo on Sunday, and so the political leadership in Pristina are trying to manipulate this by inflaming some of the tensions in order to look strong. I would urge the leaders in Pristina to abide by the Brussels agreement, to do everything they can to reject violence. I would urge the leadership in Belgrade, the Serbian leaders, to continue working with the United States and reject moves by Russia and China. They're offering enticing deals with Serbia, and Serbia must move away from Russia and China and continue their relationship with the United States. And lastly, I would just say the Biden team needs to stop deferring to the EU and to Brussels on everything in the Balkans, because we know that the EU is analysis paralysis. They're not going to move quickly. And just yesterday, we saw the Biden administration move to say, we're working with the EU on the increased attacks between Serbia and Kosovo at the border. This is not leadership. This is a way to another reason that Biden is weak. Add this to the long list of Biden problems where they fail to understand the moment and they fail to step up and take leadership. They should have a presidential envoy for the Balkans. We don't have an ambassador right now in Pristina, Kosovo. The Senate should move quickly to confirm Jeff Hovenier, who is our U.S. ambassador Kosovo nominee. Jeff is a career foreign service officer, would do a great job. And I think this is a crucial moment. And like Syria, like Libya, like Afghanistan, there's a long list of foreign policy problems that the Biden administration has ignored. And I think you can add the Balkans and the problems right now that we're seeing because of lack of Biden leadership.
Rick, as always, we appreciate your insight into Iran and, of course, your focus on the Balkans. We want to continue to update our audience on those kind of issues because, like you said, the Trump administration left the Biden administration all of these new deals, whether you call them peace deals, economic deals, working relationships from the Balkans to the Middle East, and it just feels like they're not being cultivated. Like you said, they're not, there's the people aren't there to cultivate. Now you see violence break out on the border between Serbia and Kosovo, which I remember when you were on early about this, they were celebrating this new economic agreement that they had. We come back. What's happening at our border? What's the Biden administration doing there? Pretty shocking numbers, to say the least.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial at a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack. It's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Secular. I do want to, before we shift to the border, let me just say that Israel's foreign minister just put out a new statement, I think because of all these conflicting statements from the Biden administration. This is what Foreign Minister Lapid, who, by the way, is also the alternate prime minister in Israel's current power-sharing government, so he's got even a more significant role than a normal foreign minister would have. Quote, the foreign minister shared with the National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, Israel's concern about Iran's race towards nuclear capability. This is the key. This is new as of just a few minutes ago. And the fact that Iran is becoming a nuclear threshold state. That is from Israel. Dad, I know we're about to turn to the border crisis, but that just came out and we were talking about it from Israel. That's a new way of categorizing Iran as a nuclear threshold state. That means, yeah, you know, when we started this talk under the Obama years, they've made a lot of progress and Israel's got great intel in their nuclear program. Now they are considered right on the threshold.
Yeah, but here's the thing that you have to put in mind. The president, when it was President Trump, said, we're done with this deal. Because this is meaningless. Because everybody knew the Iranians were, number one, violating it. Number two, they were on a path to getting nuclear weapons. And number three, Europe was still in the deal when the United States was out. So there was still technically this, you know, the deal was in place. And yet the Iranians were knowingly and willfully violating it. So, Andy, this is politics, but it's a charade. It's a sham.
It is a charade and it is a sham. And it is really sickening to see that the United States is taking such a weak position with respect to the rest of the world in the eyes of the rest of the world in the Middle East. I'm going to tell you one thing for absolute sure. The United States may not do anything to prevent Iran from becoming a nuclear power, but I will tell you that Israel will. And that's a sad commentary on where the United States stands in the world. The Israelis know the threat that Iran poses as a threshold nuclear power. They just enunciated it in the statement that was made by the alternate prime minister. And that sends a message to me and should to the whole world. Israel is saying it is not going to happen.
I want to shift to the immigration issue because it is a massive problem at our southern border. It's not letting up. But now we know, because of some documents that were leaked the amount of people that are inside the United States who crossed over illegally but were granted some kind of status. Sometimes they get a court date. Some 30,000 of this group actually got work permits, but 160,000 people in 7 months, basically since the Biden team fully took over the U.S. government and got their policies in place, 160,000 people who came to the border illegally have been resettled somewhere in the United States. Some have court dates that they're supposed to show up to. But, Dad, we talk about this all the time. We've created now another almost 200,000 people, men, women, and children, who will be likely living in the shadows most of their life because they are not on a pathway to any kind of legal status or citizenship.
No, so all you're doing is adding more humanity suffering as it goes forward, because these people, as you said, have to live in the shadows. We do not have, and we've been calling for it for decades, comprehensive immigration reform. Instead, what you have is, let's face it, this is catch and release. And I want to go to Than first, and then I've got a question for Andy. And Than, this policy of the Biden administration has been a disaster on the border. They don't want to call it a crisis, but it's way past that. You've got almost 200,000 people in the United States that have been basically put in the stream of the whole country. So not just affecting Texas. It's not just affecting California or Arizona. It's affecting everywhere. And there seems to be no talk of any kind of move in Congress on any of this.
Well, Jay, first of all, the administration is treating border enforcement like some sort of superfluous duty. They think that it's optional. They think that it's not a fundamental duty. The reason it's a fundamental duty, Jay, as we've talked about many times on this broadcast, is because of how many other things it impacts. When you don't secure the border, you've got a national security issue. You've got an economic security issue. You've got a crime issue. Jay, you've even got an inability to provide compassionate care to those who are trying to migrate to the United States for a better life. You talk about comprehensive immigration reform. You can't do it unless you secure the border as part of that package. But look, these new numbers that you're talking about, Jordan, the 160,000 that we know about that have been released into the country with either a notice to appear or a notice to report, Jordan, I mean, that's probably the tip of the iceberg. Those are the ones that we know about. That doesn't count the ones that are categorized as gotaways. It doesn't count as those who don't even get categorized as gotaways because we didn't catch them. Remember, one of the things that our FOIA was after is, why are we no longer actually trying to catch people and enforce the law? So, Jordan, the 160,000 sounds like an enormous number, but the truth is we don't know just how big it is. There are hundreds of thousands that are now in the interior of the country, some of which we know where they are, others we don't.
Let me just explain, too, how this works. So since March 20th, out of that 160,000, so 30,000 have gotten work permits. 94,570 illegal immigrants have been released into the U.S. with notices to report. Now, what is a notice to report? Let's just kind of cut through that. You're only required to check in with an ICE officer when you get to your final destination. That could be anywhere across the country. And when you check in, you're not deported or detained as your proceedings move forward. Now, Dad, what we know is a very small number of that 90,000 will ever contact ICE again.
Well, that's exactly right. And it puts the strain on these local communities. And Andy, it puts the strain on the healthcare system. It puts the strain on the local economies. And it puts additional strain on law enforcement in those areas. But yeah, of course, most of them aren't going to come back up for a hearing. When catch and release is basically catched and gone.
And disappear Andy? And vanish. Yes, catch and disappear and vanish is what it is, because they are not going to come back and report. They don't come back and report in the judicial system of the United States where there's bonds, and that is an added incentive to be there, or you forfeit your bond. These people are released into the interior, as we said, of the United States. We don't know what their destination is. We don't know how they're going to get there, cab, bus, train, car, plane, whatever. And you tell them to come back and you either give them a hearing date or you give them a report date. Let's not be naive about these things, Jay and Jordan. They are not going to reappear, because the apprehension in their mind is that if they do, they're going to be deported back to their country of origin or outside the United States. So they just meld into the crowd. You never hear from them, and you never see from them again. Meanwhile, the local health service, the local police service, the local judiciary, and all that are impacted. We can't keep this up. I never thought I would be quoting with approval Barack Obama, but he said recently, this is a nation state, and having porous borders like this is, to use his term, unsustainable. Joe Biden better listen to that.
When you think about the numbers, Than, I mean, in August, you had 208,000 people that were apprehended and made some kind of contact with our Border Patrol. In July, the number, 212,000. I mean, so this 160,000 from the total basically time period they've been in office and getting control of the government, so since March, is still a very small number. I mean, it's what happens to the other 400,000? I mean, it's 200,000 people a month that are still going through this process. I mean, you could see this 160,000 number becoming a 300,000 number and then a 500,000 number very quickly if they stay on this kind of path.
You know what's amazing to me, Jordan, is I actually expected that maybe these numbers would flatline a little bit. And I expected that not because I didn't think there would be a surge. Of course, there's going to be a surge when other people think that they're going to be allowed into the country. I thought there might be a flatline in these numbers, Jordan, because we knew that apprehension efforts were down. So I thought a lot of them would go unreported, unnoticed, unapprehended. Jordan, these numbers are exploding, even though the administration is very upfront about the fact that their enforcement efforts are down. Again, that's one of the questions that we're asking in our FOIA. So again, as huge as these numbers are, 208,000 one month, 212,000 the next month, Jordan, they're dramatically higher than even that. And if I could, just to circle back to something you asked just a minute ago, why doesn't Congress do anything? Well, I would tell you the most important thing that this administration should do doesn't require Congress. They could just put the migrant protection protocols back in place like the Trump administration had, and these numbers would start to decline. I know that, Jordan, because that's what's happening when they were in place. Now, there is a bill from Elise Stefanik in the House and Marsha Blackburn in the Senate that would require the administration to. But, Jordan, that bill doesn't have to pass for President Biden to say, you know what, it was working before, I'll put it back in place.
No, instead, what we're seeing again is catch and release on a massive scale, hundreds of thousands of people with catch and release and these phony times to check in with ICE and court dates. Do you think those individuals are going to do that? No, they got here. They got to the promised land, if you will, and they're going to then live in the shadows, use false Social Security numbers. It's unfortunate, but yet they're put in this situation by the U.S. government. When we come back, your thoughts on that, your thoughts on Iran as well, 1-800-684-3110.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. ACLJ.org.
We're going to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110, this final segment of today's broadcast. Two topics. One, how much of a threat do you believe Iran would be with an unrestrained nuclear program? I mean, I think it's a serious threat, but I'd love your thoughts on that and how it would change the world. 1-800-684-3110. And the immigration issue. I mean, the fact, you know, Diane wrote it on YouTube, and I'll put this out to our team. How could the courts handle 160,000 additional immigration cases? Dad, I can answer that question right now. They can't. They don't have enough. I mean, they can't handle the cases from 5 years ago right now. Then they had a pandemic, so they're even more slowed down than ever before. Our immigration courts have for now over two decades, I think, been totally overwhelmed. And that's not because the people aren't trying to get cases moving through. It's just because we have too many people coming across illegally that the government lets in, that the people who are waiting in line to come through the normal immigration process are not getting in. So now there's reports that because our court system is so long, our immigration, normal legal immigration system is so bad, that middle-class families are beginning to make the trek to say, you know what, we can take our resources and it's better to go just walk through the border than it is to go through the legal process and we can have our life in America.
Of course. And that's exactly and precisely what's happening. And the reality is the system has been broken, by the way. This is not a Joe Biden problem. This goes back many administrations. The failure to get comprehensive immigration reform has, I think, produced a very serious strain on our country. We're losing resources. We are losing tax revenue. I mean, remember, these people aren't paying tax dollars. And if they were in the system paying income tax on the money they earned, that would help the United States and our finances. There is no way you're going to be sending back 20 to 40 million people to their country of origin that have been here for 20 or 30 years. So we've got to come up with comprehensive immigration reform. Now, having said that, and I've been saying that for, you know, 20 years, the fact of the matter is, man, there is zero movement on this, and at least there appears to be.
Yeah, it's been a hurdle that Congress has not been able to get over. But, you know, honestly, Jay, I think the answer as to why they haven't been willing or able to acquire the political capital to do it is actually pretty simple. And it's actually playing out right in front of us as we see now. I mean, you cannot provide comprehensive immigration reform or in any sort of a pathway or anything like that, Jay, unless part of the package at the same exact time is border security. Because if you do that, if you create a new pathway, if you create new programs, or new visa allocations or raise the caps or any of that and say, we will secure the border down the road, it never actually happens. You expand the numbers, people come across the border, and border security never happens. Actually, that's why I think over these last couple of years, Jay, there really was a pathway where what you're describing could have been accomplished, because we were seeing the numbers at the border start to come down. We were starting to get operational control over the border. And at that point, Jay, I really think the House and Senate, the Congress, would have been out of excuse. They would have had to tackle this in a meaningful way. But as it stands now, it's a more complicated measure, a more complicated effort than it's ever been before.
But Will Haynes just pointed out, and this is true, this is basically de facto amnesty, Andy. I mean, the fact is, these court dates don't matter. The courts can't even handle them if they could. So, I mean, we're kidding ourselves if we think that this can just be, you know, resolved by people showing up for a hearing. That is not going to happen. That's not the way this works.
No, it's not. You're right. It is. It is amnesty. It's come one, come all, walk over the border. We get a court date, get a notice to appear date. If you get the court date and you do show up, the immigration courts and the immigration judges can't hear these cases in any meaningful fashion, in any expedited form. So you're basically in the United States living, as we say, in the shadows, living for free off the resources of the land. You've destabilized that way the communities throughout the country because the healthcare systems are unable to bear this. The local law enforcement can't bear it. The judiciary can't bear it. And basically, you've opened the country to anybody who wants to come in. That is not the way you run a nation state. If, as President Trump said, if we're going to have a country, we have to have borders, and those borders need to be secure and not porous. President Biden takes an opposite approach. We have to recognize that. His approach is come one, come all. His own boss, Obama, said that is not sustainable. And you know what? It's not.
Well, this is self-inflicted. I mean, because, Thad, as you pointed out, the new way, the negotiations that were done, the Remain in Mexico policy, the diplomacy that was done by the Trump administration to make this a better process for everyone, Americans and those seeking to come to America, and so it's not a humanitarian crisis, we're undone. And it just seems to me like, Dan, the Biden team, they love these crises, because when you get a crisis, then you get to say, well, the solution is we got to have 100,000 more people in the country, and then it's 100,000 more Haitians, and this is people come, and now it's middle class families who are saying, it's better than waiting in the legal immigration line. We got the money to do this. We'll just walk across and set up our life here. I mean, so this is all self-inflicted, solely because they could not stand doing anything that the Trump administration, keeping any policies that the Trump administration put in place, even policies that were working, that were bipartisan, that were fair, and obvious, and honestly, much more humanitarian.
Well, Jordan, if the problem is solved, you can no longer run campaigns on solving the problem. And by the way, if your political opponent solves the problem or is the leader of the entity that solves the problem, you definitely can't run political campaigns on it. And I really think that got in the way during the last administration of the Democrat Party in Washington, D.C., being willing to be a part of the solution, because all of the signs were there, Jordan, that we were moving towards progress on this issue. I mean, the border was securing and there was a coalition building in Washington, D.C. to pass some of these reforms. And by the way, the ACLJ has been uniquely situated on this. And a lot of this is due to the work that you've headed up in the asylum space. I mean, we have long said you have got to stop the asylum abuse, not just to limit entry into the country, Jordan, but to actually make the asylum slots that are available go to people who are really legitimately running for their lives and need a better place to live and are coming to the United States for that opportunity. When you take those slots away and give them to people or bog down the court system with people falsely claiming asylum, what do you do, Jordan? You don't just create a national security problem. You actually keep the people who desperately need America to be that safe harbor for them. You keep America from being able to do that.
Listen, this is just Barack Obama, President Obama, as Andy talked about, just last month, at the end of last month. So, I mean, just a couple weeks ago, talking about the border and how this is unsustainable. Now, he didn't do anything about it at the time, and made it worse, and of course criticized the wall, but take a listen.
Immigration is tough. It always has been, because on the one hand, I think we are naturally a people that wants to help others. At the same time, we're a nation state. We have borders. The idea that we can just have open borders is something that I think, as a practical matter, is unsustainable.
So he knows it's unsustainable. And we were at a point where we were building a wall. We had these new agreements, Dad. We had all these things in place under the Trump administration to start dealing with the crisis. I say start dealing with the crisis to disincentivize a middle-class family, especially, from making that trek. But it's gotten so open at that border that even Barack Obama saying unsustainable. And that's because when you start getting to not just the most desperate people, but just average folks who got the money to do it, who say, yeah, I'll just use this route, then you've entered a whole new phase of the problem at the border.
And you've also harmed our natural immigration system that has worked so well for so long.
That's right. The people who want to follow the rules are really, really at the back of the line. We will talk to you tomorrow. Go to ACLJ.org.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.